This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. Senior fellow at Georgetown University's Woodstock Theological Center, Jesuit Father Thomas Rees, says the cardinals may have a tough task trying to elect a new pope in the conclave that begins Tuesday here in the Vatican. In the run-up to the conclave, I asked him to share his thoughts on some of the aspects of the conclave and to offer a job description for the next pope.
Well, of course, what we're looking for is someone who's holy, someone who's intelligent, that knows theology, knows the teachings of the church, but also somebody who can communicate, you know, can communicate to the average person, not just the scholars. And finally, there's been a lot of talk about the need for someone who can reorganize and get the Vatican under control, because bishops are upset about the leaks, about allegations of corruption and everything else, and they don't like that. So you put that all together, and it looks like Jesus Christ with an MBA. That's a pretty tough job description for anybody. And there's obviously nobody who fits it perfectly. So I think we have to be realistic in terms of whoever gets elected pope. They're not going to be perfect. In my mind, you know, I think it's a mistake to look for the pope to be the answer man on everything. You know, in the last two conclaves, basically what they did is they elected the smartest man in the room. I mean, clearly, you know, Pope John Paul II, brilliant, and Pope Benedict, brilliant theologian. You know, maybe this time what they ought to do is elect the man who will listen to all the other smart people in the church. You know, not be the person who has the answer for everything, but the person who can bring people together, bring all the creative and bright people in the church together to work together on the problems facing the church. And, you know, so we have a pope who's a consensus builder, you know, who brings together a team of people. So, you know, he doesn't have to have every one of those qualifications, but the most important thing he has to do is bring together people who can do the jobs, especially the things that he can.
As well as with other problems, as you say, facing the church. But let's talk a moment about the crisis affecting the church as a whole. How has that affected the church in the United States and the prospects for an American pope?
Well, of course, the church has always been in crisis ever since Peter and Paul, you know, were arguing at the First Council of Jerusalem. The church has gone through centuries of crisis, and somehow we survive, and we will survive this crisis. Clearly, in the United States, the crisis that hit us and the most serious crisis we've had in our history is the sex abuse crisis, a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. That scarred these children terribly and for life. And, you know, we as a church have to get down on our knees and apologize to them. But because of that experience, the American cardinals are very definite in their opinion that the new pope has to be someone who understands the sex abuse crisis. As Cardinal George said, you know, someone who supports the policies that Benedict put in, namely zero tolerance, that any priest involved in this abuse of a minor must be dismissed from the priesthood. It would be an absolute disaster for the church in the United States if the new pope, you know, a week after he's elected, got up and said, oh, the sex abuse crisis, not a real problem. It's just a creation of the media. This would put us back 20 years of progress in the United States. And I don't know how we would recover from something like that. So for the Americans, you know, that is one issue that they want to make sure that the new pope is on target on.
Now, people are still asking, why did Pope Benedict resign? And there are varying interpretations of his decision. Some see it as courageous. Other people see it as a weakness. What impact do you think that decision will have on the future church and possibly on the conclave?
I am in admiration for Pope Benedict for resigning, because he put the church ahead of himself. You know, he didn't cling to power and honor and the prestige of the office. basically, I take him at his word. His health is declining. He doesn't have the kind of strength. I think it was inevitable that during this century, because of modern medicine, that a pope resign. Modern medicine keeps us physically alive long after anyone is capable physically or mentally of doing the job that is demanded of a pope. I mean, we all have parents or grandparents, relatives who, you know, they're still alive, yeah, but could they be pope? No, totally incapable of that. And I think what he did was courageous. I think it makes it much easier for a future pope who's sick or aging to retire. The real question is, does it make it possible for a pope who, say, turns 75 or turns 80 years of age and says, well, all the other bishops in the world resign at 75. Maybe that's a good idea for me, or at 80. This opens up the possibility of electing a younger man as pope. I mean, if you elect someone in their, 50s or 60s, I mean, they could be pope for 20, 30, even 40 years. And that's a pretty long papacy. And especially if they got sick towards the end. So this is, you know, the fact that we've now had a pope resign makes it possible, well, maybe we could have a younger pope who, you know, would feel at ease resigning and calling for the election of a new pope. So we don't know what all the consequences of this resignation are. The real fear, of course, of people is that, you know, we will now see people trying to pressure popes to resign. You know, if you don't like the pope, you know, draw up a petition and get him to resign. Put pressure on him to resign, because now we know it's possible to resign. That is the fear, because that would be very divisive in the church and
but
very
we're
dangerous.
We're already seeing a lot of these pressure groups coming out with lists of who they say should be excluded from the list of papabili.
Yes, and of course, that's one of the reasons the cardinals go behind closed doors, lock the gates, turn off the phones, turn off the internet, so that they can have complete quiet and peace and make this decision in prayer without being influenced by the outside. And I think the cardinals are pretty good at that. I don't think they're going to be pushed around by anybody.
Before retiring, Pope Benedict XVI changed some of the rules for this transition period between one pope and another. What were those primary changes?
Well, Pope Benedict made two changes. First, a very good change that he made was to go back to the two-thirds rule being totally required. Pope John Paul II changed the rules to say that if they didn't get a two-thirds majority for the pope after about a couple of weeks of voting, then they could elect someone by a majority vote. This went against almost the 900,000 years of tradition of requiring a two-thirds vote, and I think Benedict was right in putting it back. The second thing he changed was to say that, since he announced his resignation 2 weeks in advance, and under the old rules, then the conclave would begin 2 weeks after his resignation. Well, that's a whole month from the time of his announcement to the actual meeting of the conclave. And so some people said, no, that's too much time. Let's move it forward. Other people said, no, what's the hurry? You know, we've got this is the most important thing the cardinals are ever going to do. And when you think about it, I mean, there's 24 cardinals who became cardinals last year. Now, these people, these 24 cardinals don't know the other cardinals. They need a chance to get to meet them, to talk to them informally and all that. So I don't see what the rush was. I think they should have just kept to the date of 15 days after the resignation, which would have been March 15th. But I don't think there was any need to rush into it.
In this digital age and age of electronic voting, it can seem a bit antiquated to have gray or white smoke coming out of a smokestack. Do you think that we'll see a change in these procedures in future conclaves?
Well, I love the white smoke. I think that's a great tradition. You know, it's not that old, actually. It's only about 100 years old, this tradition of the white and black smoke. I just wish they would test the equipment before the conclave starts, because too often it comes out as gray smoke and we're all scratching our heads. Is it white? Is it black? Is it gray? What's it mean? Now, they have a backup plan, which they instituted at the last conclave, which is not only do we go by the smoke, but the biggest bell in St. Peter's will also be rung when the election takes place. So if the smoke's gray, we can at least wait for the bell. I think I like that tradition. Actually, they modernized the meeting of the General Congregation. Each of the cardinals now has a little clicker so that they can vote electronically during the meetings of the General Congregation. That's a little quicker. The voting in the actual conclave is practically choreographed. I mean, they write the name. Each cardinal writes the name of his choice on a small piece of paper, folds it, and then they march up one at a time to place their ballots into the container. And they hold it up in the air so everybody can see there's only one ballot. And before they drop it into the container, they swear that they're voting for the person that they think is most qualified to be Pope. So the voting procedure takes a while because of this kind of procedure. But that's the way they do it, and they'll probably continue doing it that way.
Of course, the Catholic Church believes that it's the Holy Spirit which guides the voting process among the cardinals. Does that mean that the future pope has been hand-picked by God?
Well, I think Cardinal Ratzinger answered that question extraordinarily well. Certainly, the Holy Spirit is trying to influence the election. And through prayer, through discernment, the cardinals are trying to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit in inspiring them to pick whoever is best. But as Cardinal Ratzinger pointed out, if you look at the kinds of people that have been elected pope in the past, you certainly cannot blame the Holy Spirit for the election of the Borgias or some of the bad popes that we've had. So, you know, Jesus Christ founded the church, but he left it to human beings to run. And among those human beings who have been involved in the running of the church, there have been saints. There have been sinners. There have been very smart people and very dumb people. It's a divine institution run by human beings, and our call, you know, the call of the cardinals is the same as for all Christians, to be open to the Spirit. What is the Spirit? What is God calling us to do today, and how to be, that's why all of the church should be praying for the cardinals as they meet, that they might truly be open to the Spirit in choosing our next pope.
There's a saying here in the Vatican that you go into the conclave a pope, you come out a cardinal. Does that mean that there might be a number of cardinals who are going to be disappointed?
Well, of course, there will be cardinals who are disappointed, but you know, that saying, you go in the Pope, you come out a cardinal, isn't always true. I mean, clearly, Pius XII, everybody knew he was going to be elected. Pacelli was the lead candidate. Everybody knew he was going to be elected Pope, and he was. The same thing, I think, was true with Paul VI. He was the leading candidate. All the smart money was on him. And he was elected. At the last conclave, before the Pope died, nobody was really talking about Cardinal Ratzinger. But shortly after the Pope died, Pope John Paul II died, you know, the the Ratzinger people kept talking about him as the leading candidate. And by the time he went into the conclave, he was clearly the leading candidate, and all the smart money was on him. So sometimes we're surprised, but it tends to be when the leading candidates can't get the two-thirds. Or, you know, for example, at the time of the election of Pope John Paul II, here was a classic case where two candidates just blocked each other, two Italian candidates, Siri and Benelli, backed by two different factions. The Italians were split. The Italians can have a tremendous impact on the election if they're united. But if they're split, then as they were at the conclave that elected John Paul, well, then people start looking outside of Italy for a candidate, and they found Cardinal Wojtyla. And so that's when we get surprised. It's when the leading candidates are kind of kill each other off and are incapable of getting the two-thirds vote.